For one who speaks the truth, hiding your identity is rather suspicious. Unless, of course, your face is so terrible you want no one to see it. I'm afraid that's you, the snake threw back, the girl who wears the mask of a queen. Agatha didn't flinch, sticking to Nicola's plan. We can understand why you hide your face, of course. The Lady of the Lake showed it to Sophie. The lake waters are magic, preserved your reflection. Sophie saw it, said you're the ugliest man she's ever seen. The snake's eyes flicked to Sophie. Sophie gawked at Agatha, as if she might be betraying her to save her own skin. But then Sophie saw her friend's expression. Just like that, Sophie understood. Agatha's right, Sophie confirmed, pivoting to the snake. The Lady of the Lake said that's why you forced her to kiss you. That's why you drained her of magic and left her a hag, because you like to punish beautiful girls who don't want to be with you. Lies, the snake hissed. No more lies than your truths, said Agatha. Which means there's only one way to prove the real truth, Sophie egged on. Show us your face. Show us what you showed her. He took this in, staring at her, and then began to circle, closer than before. Agatha could see his chiseled muscles cutting against the thin scales of his suit. She could smell him now, a cool, minty scent she hadn't expected, like a forest after a snowstorm. She could see Sophie stiffen slightly, smelling it too, because he didn't smell like Rafal did. He smelled more like Tedros. Your friend Chaddick thought he knew things about me, said the snake, passing behind them. Girls at school must have enjoyed him. Such lovely thick hair and big grey eyes. And not just handsome, but sharp. Too. Sharper than you two, and your boyfriend, at least. He put together all the clues. He found the answers that are lying right under your nose. Such a pity. If only he'd just gone back to his king and told him what he'd found. If only he hadn't tried to be a hero. But he thought he had a way to trap me. He thought he had the perfect plan. The snake curved past Agatha's shoulder and moved in front of the girls. The last thing he saw as he died on the shore was the sorceress supposed to protect him, kissing the one who'd killed him. And the last thing he heard was her telling me how beautiful I am. Just like a king named Arthur, who once had my blood. He glowered at Sophie. That's what became of dear Chaddick's plan. Agatha could see Sophie's eyes dart to her. Rafal's ego could be stoked, his attentions diverted. But this snake was onto them and their plan. At least Chaddick wasn't a coward, Agatha intervened, quickly changing tactics. If it's true you have King Arthur's blood, then show us your face. Otherwise, it's just another lie. Eels shot off the snake's body like ropes, shackling Agatha to a pillar. Before Agatha could scream, a last eel gagged her, sticky scales twisting against her tongue. Sophie paled in horror, her whole body shaking. Sweet things, aren't they? the snake said, caressing the eel in Agatha's mouth. My little Skims. The snake skulked towards her. Sophie retreated until her back flattened against the column next to Agatha, who flailed under the Skims. I see why boys love you, Sophie. He cooed, trapping her against the pillar. I see why so many want you as their own. Everything about you is sumptuous. He stroked her cheek, scales against skin. Sophie shivered, breath shallowing. Agatha could feel Sophie's hand move along the stone, trying to find hers. That was Rafal's weakness, wasn't it? The snake said, curling closer. Kissing beautiful girls. Sophie's clammy palm found Agatha's beneath her binds. Agatha held it tight while trying to break free. And I, too, had the same weakness for someone in your story. Someone I called a friend. The snake said to Sophie, pressing against her, someone kinder than me. Someone gentler than me. Someone who never went quite far enough. He gazed into Sophie's scared eyes. Do you know who it was? Sophie choked out a word.
Me?
The snake laughed. No, not you. His long tongue licked at her lips. Arik. Agatha gasped, thrashing wildly against her binds, but two Skims blindfolded her, lashing across her eyes. Another squeezed her throat so hard, she started to black out. She heard Skim shriek with blood-curdling madness, then Sophie screaming like she'd never screamed before. Something ripped Sophie's hand from hers. Agatha lunged blindly to find it. Darkness pulled her under. Like a sheet. Chapter 19. Hort. 4 point. A scream tore through the royal garden.
Sophie!
Hort choked, taking off towards the castle bare-chested and bellowing. But he'd forgotten he had 6 prisoners cuffed to him, and they all went tumbling down into brilliant flowers, Hort included, like friends playing Ring Around the Rosy. Nicola groaned, gashed badly by a pink rosebush, thorns still stuck in her skin. She looked to Hort for help, but he was up and running again, trying to pull the other bodies towards the castle.
The snake has her. Sophie needs me.
A force held him back, keeping him running in place, slipping and sliding on flower petals. Furious, he swung around to see Thiago stepping on the chain, while sunburnt Wesley puffed on a cigar beside him.
Thought the snake killed him already,
Wesley groused.
Took the 2 girls, rest coming to the 4 point,
said Thiago, studying Hort with his tattooed eyes.
4 point?
Wesley raised his brows.
Should be quite a show, then.
The pirates snickered before they each curled the chain around their boots and yanked it, sending the kids swinging to their feet and stumbling forward. As they trudged through the hot, humid gardens, Hort kept peeping back at the castle.
Hey, why does that pirate keep giving you strange looks?
Dot whispered in front of him. Hort looked up and saw Thiago eyeing him again as he muttered something to Wesley. Hort tried to keep his face in shadow.
You know him, don't you?
Dot said.
Shh,
Hort whispered.
He's Smee's son. I recognize him from a pirate parley that Dad took me to in Neverland.
Smee? Captain Hook's henchman? You're friends with his son? Dot retorted. Then why are we chained up here like dogs?
Because I killed Smee, you fool.
Dot stared at him.
Last year, during the war against Rafal, Hort whispered. Granted, it was Smee's zombie, but even so. If he recognizes me, we're dead meat. Luckily, Thiago hasn't seen me for a few years, and I've buffed up and changed my hair. But not enough that he won't figure it out if we don't stop talking about it.
Hort looked back anxiously at the castle again. Hort, sweetie, we're well aware the snake has Sophie. Dot simpered. We all heard the scream and we're scared for her. Well, not really her, since she's horrible, but Agatha at least, since she's the only one who can command our ship and get us out of here. Meanwhile, we've been taken captive by pirates, are being marched to our doom, and this chain not only won't turn into chocolate, but I'm also pretty sure we saw a piece of it turn into an eel back there and fly away. So, if I were you, I'd stop worrying about rescuing Sophie and use those lovely buffed-up muscles of yours to rescue us.
I thought Weasel and Sophie were old news, said Anadil in front of Dot. Left new news crying with thorns in her bum, said Hester in front of her.
Hort glanced back at Nicola, who averted her eyes. Hort sighed gloomily. Here he thought he'd moved on to a girl who was smart and pretty and normal. A girl who actually liked him for his weird, scuzzy self. And then when it came time to show her he liked her, too, he'd picked you-know-who instead. Again. He forced himself to think of other things, like why they were heading to the Forepoint, or how that piece of chain had turned into a flying eel, or where Beatrix's quest team was. But Sophie's wail still echoed in his head. Is the snake torturing her? Will I ever see her again? Is she dead? He whirled around, but the castle was obscured by colourful groves which seemed to have sprouted up around him. He squinted over lilac hedges. Would she rescue you? Dot asked, staring at him again. Hort frowned.
I don't think that matters.
Would Nicola rescue you? Dot asked. Hort blinked. It does matter, then, said Dot archly. She turned back around. Hort's eyes widened as a tree sprinkled white petals on his hair like wedding rice. It's that simple, isn't it? If he stopped being an idiot, he could have a girlfriend right now. A real girlfriend, kinder than Sophie, and more attentive, and definitely less psycho. A girlfriend he could take to Halloween haunts and go swimming in the school pool with, and dance with at no balls, and collect fresh beetles to lay on his dad's grave every Sunday.
Wait, the Forepoint is Camelot's land, he whispered to Dot suddenly. Isn't that what the beaver said? There's a chapter about it in A Student's History of the Woods, too. It's a memorial to King Arthur. No one is allowed there, good or evil.
Didn't learn much in history, to be honest, Dot whispered back. First, Seda dies teaching it,
and then his sister takes over and teaches us the wrong history, and then she dies, and then the schoolmaster takes over, and then he dies, and now you're teaching history, which means you'll probably die soon. Especially since the Storian didn't include you on our quest to begin with. Dot pursed her lips. Goodness, I really shouldn't think out loud.
Forget all that, Hort said, frowning. If no one's allowed on Camelot's land, why are they taking us there? Because then Camelot's king will have to rescue us,
Hester cut in, glaring back at them.
A king whose sword is stuck in a stone.
Tedros, without his sword, said Dot. Doesn't inspire confidence, does it?
We need to escape now, Hester demanded, and by we, I mean the whole crew, Agatha, Sophie, and Beatrix's team included. Questers stick together at all costs. Can't you turn into a man-wolf and bust us out of here?
Anadil said, swiveling to Hort.
I can't wolfify with my hands like this. I need to point my glow at my chest, said Hort. What about your rats? Thugs got them too,
Anadil moped. Hort peered over her shoulder to see her three pets trapped in a chain link. Heads squeezed through the loop and tiny feet dangling like a rat version of an Iron Maiden. Meanwhile, Hester's demon jangled its chain as if to preempt the question.
So, we got nothing, said Hort.
Except the word wolfify, Dot wisped, eyeing his sweaty chest. So sensual. Hort was stone-faced. We need to talk to Nicola, Dot added, clearing her throat. She saved our life twice. Maybe she can do it again. Everyone looked at Hester for approval, Anadil included. Hester grimaced.
Fine.
They glanced back at Nicola, concealed behind Willem and Bogdan, who were still twittering. From what Hort could see of her, Nicola was gazing off glassily into the gardens.
How can I talk to her from here?
Hort asked Dot. Send a message through us, a voice said. Hort turned to see Willem eavesdropping. We've been trying to come up with a plan on our own to help us all escape, said Willem, red hair glinting in the sun. I can't do magic, and neither can Bogdan, because he says he doesn't have a finger glow yet. But we figured out we're both good at fortune-telling. Oh, and playing bongos.
Helpful. Ask Nicola what we should do then, said Hort.
Willem whispered to Bogdan, who whispered to Nicola. Nicola suddenly looked alert, meeting Hort's eyes for a half second before she whispered to Bogdan, who whispered to Willem, who swiveled to Hort. She says this is like the story of Uncle Miyazaki. If we can't bust the chain off, we all have to work as one unit. Like a snake, with Hester at the head and Nicola at the tail. That is, if Hort still remembers who Nicola is. She told me I had to say that verbatim and make sure everyone heard. Hester, Dot, Anadil, Willem, and Bogdan glowered at Hort.
Well, tell her that if we get out of this alive, I'll take her on a date to Dumpy's Dumpling House,
Hort promised. Willem whispered to Bogdan, who whispered to Nicola, who sent her reply up the chain.
She says Sophie can't come on the date and that it can't be at a place called Dumpy's, said Willem.
Beauty and the Feast in Sherwood Forest is exquisite, Dot offered. Robin Hood took me there once. I didn't tell Daddy. Hort gave her a strange look before turning to Willem.
Tell her she has a deal. First date, somewhere romantic. Just me and her.
he said, smiling, which Willem was about to pass down the chain, but Nicola had gleaned the message because she was smiling too.
"Glad you have your love life sorted, since we're about to die,"
Hester snarled.
"How are we supposed to work like one unit when there's seven of us on this chain, including two first years and an altar boy?"
But the pirates were watching now, clearly listening, and Hester went mum. Thiago gave Hort another knife-sharp look before murmuring to Wesley. Ornate gates lay ahead, made of blue and white porcelain, marking the end of royal property. Though the gates were unlatched with plenty of room to pass through, Wesley kicked them ajar with his silver-tipped boot, shattering the bottom of a gate. Doves scattered from the trees above.
"Dad was a pirate and never acted like these goons," Hort thought.
That's because he and his dad had gone to school, where they'd learned that even though good and evil were eternal enemies, the two sides were in balance. The two sides had respect. Except the snake and his minions had no respect for good or evil. They attacked both sides the same. A troubling thought dawned on Hort. If the snake didn't have respect for either side, what did he have respect for? And what would happen if he gained control of Camelot? You'd have a king of the most powerful realm in the land of good and evil who spat in the face of both.
What would happen to the Storian?
He thought, chest pounding.
What would happen to the woods?
The broken gate creaked behind him, reminding him of Sophie's scream. Goosebumps peppered his skin. For all they knew, Sophie and Agatha were dead by now. Sooty clouds seeped into the sky, veiling the sun, and a damp, cool wind snaked into the garden with a soggy, mouldy smell. Hort could see the path widening ahead, the trees and clover growing sparser around it. He heard something now, drifting in on the wind. A dark rumble, like an elephant shaking the earth.
"What is that?"
Hort whispered. It was getting louder now, slashes of high-pitched noise piercing the thunderous roll.
"Whatever it is, it doesn't sound good," Willem said behind him.
The young pirates peeked back and grinned. The path was gone entirely now, the forest thinning out to open grass that craned steeply uphill, with the ominous buzz coming from beyond it. Hort followed his fellow prisoners up the slope, his legs burning, pushing the limits of fatigue. He could hear Dot panting and Bogdan's puny wheezes, but no one flagged, the amplifying rumbles propelling them forward. Hort's heart beat faster, surging blood into his muscles, begging him to run and get his friends out of here as fast as he could. But there was no escape from what was coming. It was time to find out the evil they faced. Soon, they were at the crest, sopping with sweat. Thiago and Wesley fell back with leering smiles, ceding way for their captives to see what lay down below. The seven crew members huddled together in a ball, the chain folding around their bodies. They peered over the hill. Hort instantly felt sick. From his vantage point, he could see four kingdoms in the distance converge on a plot of land in the middle, about 100 yards wide and 50 yards long. From the east, he glimpsed the midnight blue castle and rising pink moon of his home kingdom, Bloodbrook. From the south, the green pea pods of Kingdom Kyrgios. From the north, the kingdom of Ravenbow, with its steaming rivers of blood and towers made of bone. From the west, the outlying veils of Jean Joly, awash in Easter egg colours. All four kingdoms smashed up against the forepoint, sealed off by four walls made of frozen water, jagged and brittle, as if a waterfall had frozen mid-flow. The iced walls were at least 50 feet high over the forepoint, shivering with sonic roars. But now, Hort saw what was making the noise. Bodies. Thousands and thousands of them, and not just human, dwarves, giants, trolls, dwarves, fairies, nymphs, goblins, and more. Assailing the frozen walls from every direction, screaming and kicking and battering them with weapons, revolting against what was inside. Slowly, Hort's eyes lifted. Inside the forepoint, a colossal gallows loomed beneath a pink and grey sky like an open-air theatre. Dozens of nooses hung from beams above the high wooden platform, arranged in three distinct rows. Only the nooses weren't made out of ropes, Hort realized, as they gleamed in the few scraps of sun coming through the clouds. They were made of thick black scales and instantly familiar, because they reminded him of eels. That wasn't the worst part, though. The worst part was that the second and third rows of nooses were already filled. The prisoners' heads slipped through the scaly black loops, and their feet planted firmly on trap doors beneath them. The moment the trap doors opened, each person would fall through and be hanged. High above the prisoners, Camelot's flag fluttered from a pole speared through the stage. Heart racing, Hort tried to see past the empty first row of nooses to the faces of the prisoners in the second and third rows, but the darkening sky had left most of them in shadow. "Isn't that the king of Jean Joly?" Dot said. As Hort's eyes adjusted, he made out the king's sullied robes and broken crown. In the nooses next to him were his two young boys and his queen. A queen that the snake had already declared dead.
"Get everyone to think she's dead, and then kill her in front of them," Hester murmured. "Make them grieve twice. What better way to scare people? Not even Granny would have thought of that, and she was the White Witch," said Anadil, unnerved.
Panicked citizens of Jean Joly bashed against the ice walls in their pastel-coloured clothes, screaming and begging for their leaders to be saved, for the young princes to be spared. As they listened to these pleas, Hort felt his fellow crew members instinctively huddle closer.
"Wait, that's the King of Bloodbrook," he said,
recognizing the great grey man-wolf who led his home kingdom, noosed up in the second row. Citizens of Bloodbrook, including dozens of man-wolves, beat the walls with weapons and tried to ram them down.
"Walls are still holding," said Hester. "Even with the Lady of the Lake powerless, whatever charm she put on the waterfalls hasn't broken yet."
"But if the walls are holding, how'd the prisoners get inside?" Dot asked. Hester looked at her.
"Hester," said Anadil.
Hester tracked her gaze to a black-haired man in a noose with gold flakes in his long beard and hair. "P-Man," said Dot, remembering the Grand Vizier they'd interviewed to be schoolmaster. Ravenbow, too, had its queen strung up, and its people rushing the frozen walls, desperate to set her free. Once upon a time, leaders of good and evil fought over this piece of land. Now they'd be killed on it, together. But there were no guards on the stage, Hort realized. No pirates or henchmen. Or executioners. Dot was right. How had the leaders been captured? And who was going to hang them? Hort. He turned and saw Nicola nestled in next to him. The first row, she said. Hort followed her eyes to the empty nooses, black scales shining. There's 7 of them, said Nicola, trembling. And there's 7 of us. Everyone stared at her, overhearing, then at each other, then at Hester. But even the fearless witch looked afraid, so did her demon. Nicola's eyes welled up. I want to go home, Hort, she whispered. I want to see Pa. Gone was the cool, unflappable girl, replaced by a first-year reader far away from her real life. It only made Hort want to protect her more, the way Nicola had protected him and their crew. Then, out of the corner of his eye, he saw the spot where the 2 pirates had just been.
They're gone, Hort blurted, spinning to the group. The pirates aren't here. There's no one guarding us. We have to run. We have to run now.
A boy's scream came from the valley, rising over the roar.
Help!
Hort stopped cold. Another scream echoed, this time a girl's.
Please help us!
Hort's face went white, and he saw the 3 witches gaping at him with the same expression. Slowly, they looked back down at the gallows. Not at the empty first row or the second filled with royal leaders, but at the 3rd row, which they couldn't quite see. The row where the screams had come from. Screams that made Hort's stomach flip. Because one scream had been Kiko's. And the other scream was Ruvan's.
He has our classmates, Hort rasped, making out Mona's green skin, Brone's bald head and hulking frame.
Hey, guys, said Nicola.
We're not leaving our friends down there, said Hester,
fear burning to anger.
Questers defend each other, no matter what. We have to help them. But how can we get over the walls if we're chained up?
Anadil asked.
And how can we get through the crowd?
Said Hort.
Guys!
Nicola said. All eyes went to her.
They're gone!
We know the pirates are gone,
Hort said, impatient.
That's why we need to go right now.
But Nicola wasn't looking at where the pirates had been. She was looking at the nooses. The front row of them. All missing.
Huh. Where did they go?
Hort started. Then he gasped. So did everyone else. The chain of teenagers suddenly lurching backwards, each of them tripping over their feet, because scaly nooses were flying towards them over the valley, over the crowd, like bats out of hell. No one had time to scream. The eels lashed around their necks like vices and ripped the crew into the air, bodies still chained in a line. Hort bucked madly, feeling Nicola choking beside him, but the nooses just squeezed harder, draining their breath, before all at once the eels dragged the prisoners down towards the gallows. 7 prey, quivering, before the kill. Chapter 20. Sophie. The Lion and the Snake. Sophie awoke to the smell of roses. She opened her eyes, feeling their petals drizzle down her back. A single wine-red bloom lay cupped in the lap of her baby blue dress. Her body was moving, magically coasting past bushes and flower beds as if pushed by a strong wind. White leaves and florets fluttered from trees overhead like an enchanted snow. "I'm in a dream," she thought, her eyes still on the rose in her lap, its lush folds sparkling under a pink sunset. Not only because she was magically gliding through a garden under someone else's power, but because the rose matched the one Tedros had thrown into the crowd on the first day of school, hunting for the girl who would be his princess. A rose Agatha had caught, just like this. The happy ending to a fairy tale that hadn't yet begun. But now the rose was in Sophie's lap, which meant it must be a dream, for this rose wasn't meant for her. If there was one lesson the whole world learned from her fairy tale, it was certainly that. "Unless it isn't Tedros's rose at all," Sophie thought. "Unless someone else threw it and I caught it, just like Agatha caught her prince's. Which means this is a new fairy tale, and this time I won't end up alone. There's someone else in this story. Someone just for me." Sophie looked up, curious, fearful, hopeful. Her face changed. It was no dream. Agatha glided beside her, bound, blindfolded, and gagged by the snake's slimy, scaly skims. Not only that, but the entire back of her best friend's body was covered in skims, like a coat of armor, from the dome of her hair down to her calves, down to the soles of her shoes. Not a shred of clothes or skin left bare. With high-pitched gurgles, like a chorus of helium-voiced rats, the skims pushed Agatha along, twitching and waggling, as she writhed blindly under her binds. Sophie grew aware of the drizzling feeling on her back again, the one she dreamily ascribed to falling flowers. Dread rising, she peeked over her own shoulder and saw that she, too, was coated in thick, gooey skims all the way down to her dainty slippers. Fear bolted her spine straight, upending the rose which fell to the ground and smashed under her feet. A scream stalled in her throat.
"Aggie?"
she wheezed.
"What do we..."
But Agatha shook her head sharply, and Sophie read the gesture at once. "He's listening." Sophie's eyes darted around, looking for the snake in the garden. Where is he? The skims were moving her faster now, through blue and white gates and up a steep, grassy slope. Sophie looked at Agatha, who was unable to see or talk, her friend's body helpless to the skims. A swell of panic crashed over her. Sophie liked to pretend the two of them were a team, but in truth, it was always Agatha who took charge, Agatha who kept her safe. No matter how much of a witch Sophie could be, she was Agatha's princess, riding behind her on her white horse. Maybe that's why Agatha had been drawn to Nicola as a friend, because she wasn't a spinning top like Sophie. Because with Sophie, Agatha always had to take the reins of the story when it counted. Only now the roles were reversed, with Agatha left helpless. Which meant, for once, it was Sophie who had the reins. She tried to remember what had happened in the map room. Slowly, it all came back to her. The quest map with their classmates' names. The storybook that called Tedros a snake and the snake a lion. The new pen he vowed would shatter their fairy tale forever. All of these were pieces of a bigger plan, the snake said. A plan Chadwick had figured out. It's why he'd had to die. The snake wasn't Rafal. That much was clear. And yet, he seemed to know her, Agatha, and Tedros intimately. As if he'd come from inside their storybook. Something had happened in that story, something that made him want revenge. So who was he, then? Terror attacks. Arthur's blood. Tedros's crown. All of it was connected. How? Arik. He'd been friends with Arik, he said. Close friends. But Arik was dead. Slain during the Schoolmaster's War. So the snake and Arik had to have been friends before that. Could the snake have been a student at school? She pictured the snake's long, youthful body. His lean, perfect muscles. His glacial blue eyes. Or was it someone Arik met before school? Sophie's forehead throbbed. Think harder. But all she could think about was the snake pinning her against the pillar with his minty Tedros scent before he fractured into a thousand eels which came flying towards her. That's when Sophie had passed out. Now these same eels were plastered across hers and Agatha's backs, wheeling them around like corpses. Sophie felt faint once more, but she forced herself to stay conscious. The skims pushed the two girls down the hill, through a gathering mist, the fading sun infusing it with a bruised purple glow. Over the skims' loud burbles, Sophie heard dark rumblings ahead, but she couldn't see anything but thick, grey fog. Sophie coughed. Not fog. Smoke. Only now it was clearing, and Sophie's eyes flared wide. The skims drove them smack into a screaming mob, brandishing fiery torches and weapons under a darkening sky. The crowd spread as far as Sophie could see in every direction, converging from four different kingdoms around a walled-off plot of land. The Fourpoint, Sophie thought. It's where her questmates were headed on the snake's quest map. Now she and Agatha were heading there too. Sophie spotted Camelot's flag flying high above the Fourpoint. Chills ran down her spine. The snake was bringing them all there for a reason. Even so, the Fourpoint was still 100 yards off, with at least 1,000 bodies in the way. The skims paid no mind, barreling straight for the jagged ice walls and thrusting the two girls into the crowd with reckless force. Sophie ducked her head, jammed between men and trolls, children and centaurs, skims gripping her tighter and tighter. She could hear the crowd as she squeezed through. King Tedros is on his way with his knights, a horned ogre said to his family.
But I thought Camelot had no knights any more, said his lumpy ogre daughter. Then he'll fight single-handedly, his humpbacked mother assured. He's King Arthur's son.
A useless king, that's what he is, groused her surly son. Don't even have Excalibur.
Watch your mouth, boy. Heard folks say they saw him riding down Glass Mountain.
A pastel-dressed man cut in.
He'll be here soon.
And he'll make whoever's responsible for this pay,
growled a troll. Sophie's head jerked up. If they were all waiting for Tedros to save them, that means they're on our side. This whole crowd was on their side, good and evil. Everyone knew Agatha was Tedros's princess and Sophie his friend. Everyone knew their fairy tale.
She swiveled her head left and right, frantically making eye contact with the ogres and everyone else near her. But as the skims rammed her and Agatha through the crowd, no one seemed to notice. Confused, Sophie started bucking against her binds, knocking hard into people and creatures who whirled around, peering angrily, but then went back to surging towards the walls. Undaunted, Sophie cried out, "Help! Someone help us!" A few people glanced in her direction, perplexed. Sophie tried harder. "We need help! It's us! Sophie and Agatha!" A skim gagged her. "Can't anyone see us?" Sophie thought, flailing wildly. "They're acting like we're..." She stiffened. The skims on her and Agatha's backs, they were made of snake scales, which meant we're invisible. Snakeskin was the one fabric that could hide its wearers, given the right hex. Sophie had used it for her own devilish designs at school. Indeed, her famous snakeskin cape now hung inside the Exhibition of Evil, cased in a special gallery dedicated to her and Agatha's fairy tale. But now the snake was cheekily ambushing her with snakeskin as if to turn her own fairy tale on its head. They were almost at the frozen walls. Just as Sophie could glimpse through them as to what lay inside, the skims yanked her and Agatha into the air, flying them up and over the walls, their backs caressing the Camelot flag flying over the forepoint. Embers of sun blinded her before they extinguished in the horizon, and it was only as she descended that Sophie could see what lay beneath her, illuminated by the crowd's torch flames. Gallows. Sophie lost her breath, scanning three rows of prisoners to be hanged, their nooses made of oily black skims. The first row had Hester, Anadil, Dot, Hort, and the rest of her crewmates still chained together, hands cuffed behind their backs. In the second row, leaders of Ever and Never Kingdoms were strung up by the neck, which had drawn the raging crowd, desperate to save them. But it was the third row that startled Sophie the most. Loaded with fourth years from the School for Good and Evil, kidnapped from their quests. These captives gazed fearfully into the crowd, unable to see Sophie or Agatha descending to the stage in front of them. Ruvan looked gaunt, his once flowing black hair crudely shaved. Mona's green skin was littered with bruises. Vex was missing a chunk of his pointy right ear. Kiko cried to herself, burn marks on her arms. More classmates teetered on trap doors near them, all injured in one way or another. Brone, Giselle, Drax. The last light in the sky went dark as the skims parachuted Sophie towards the wooden platform, Agatha floating down next to her. Their feet touched the stage. Instantly, the skims scattered off them, stripping them of their invisibility and revealing them to the mob. The crowd froze in shock. Agatha spun around, finally able to see. She took in the stunned prisoners, her eyes assessing the scene like a panther's, her fingertip glowing gold. The snake. Where is he? Sophie scanned the stage, her fingertip glowing pink. I don't see him. A buzz swept through the crowd, hopeful and intense. It's Tedros's friends, someone cried. That means he's here, shouted another. We're saved.
Hurry up, you nitwits.
Hester barked at Sophie from the front row, demon strung up next to her.
Cut us loose.
No, the children first.
the king of Jaunt Jolie said. Sophie was about to sprint for his young princes, but then she saw Agatha hadn't moved, her friend's eyes wide and pinned ahead. Slowly, Sophie turned to see the skims reassembling at the front of the stage, globbing and sticking to each other at lightning speed, until they'd reformed the snake. His mask glimmering green in the mob's torchlight. It's why Agatha had silenced her in the garden. The snake had been with them all along, split up into skims on their backs, waiting for the moment to reunite. Now the snake's cold blue gaze crept across the crowd, which was silent as a tomb.
For thousands of years, you thought your pen told you the truth, he said, voice resounding. The pen of good and evil. The pen whose stories you have believed without the slightest doubt. And what does that pen tell you now? It tells you I am the one who attacks your kingdoms. It tells you I am evil, that I am the enemy.
The snake paused.
But what if I tell you everything you think is truth is lies?
His eyes moved to the flag flying over them.
You won't believe me, of course. No one will. Not even your greatest heroes,
he said, glancing at Sophie and Agatha.
You think a lion is your only hope. You think only a lion can save you, all of you. That's what Camelot promised. A lion who can destroy evil like me. A lion with King Arthur's blood.
He looked back down at the people.
You wait for this lion named Tedros. You wait for him to answer your prayers. Yet here we are, on the lion's land, with the lion's princess, with the lion's friends, with the rulers who call on the lion to lead. Everyone, but the lion himself.
He mocked.
He stays in his castle while your kingdoms burn. He stays in his castle while his friends die. He stays in his castle like a coward.
He turned to the crowd.
Say it with me. Cowardly, little lion.
Nobody made a sound. The snake stabbed out his finger, and the noose around the youngest prince of Jaunt Jolie strangled him. The prince choked, legs twitching. The crowd screamed in horror, "Say it with me," the snake hissed.
"Cowardly little lion."
"Cowardly little lion,"
the crowd shouted.
"So he can hear you from his castle in the sky," the snake demanded.
"Cowardly little lion,"
the crowd yelled louder.
"He can't hear you," the snake lashed.
"Cowardly little lion,"
the crowd thundered, shuddering the land. The snake dropped his finger and the prince's noose relaxed, the young child wheezing for breath. His mother and father crumbled into sobs.
"Cowardly little lion, indeed," said the snake.
His eyes flicked to Sophie and Agatha.
"Well,
then. Let's see if he comes out of his cage. He whirled to the mob, and with a wave of his hand, snuffed out the sea of torches. The stage plunged into darkness. In the vast empty night, 2 dozen nooses glowed green, fluorescing like electric eels, lighting up the prisoners with heads looped through. At the front of the stage, Sophie and Agatha faced off against the snake, awash in the gallows' alien green haze. Beyond the iced walls, the crowd was hushed in the dark, like an audience in wait of a play. Sophie could see them looking back anxiously, searching for any sign of Tedros. "Perhaps we shouldn't write off the lion so soon. By now he knows of your predicament," the snake said to the girls, the edge coming off his voice. "I'll give him 10 more seconds to show his face." Neither Sophie nor Agatha moved. "Aren't you going to help your friends?" the snake said serenely. "One, two, go!" Kiko shrieked. Sophie twirled to Agatha. "I'll take front row." "He's lying, Sophie," Agatha breathed. "Three," said the snake. Sophie took off, shooting the back nooses with her pink glow. Agatha unleashed her gold glow at the front rows. "It's not working," Sophie shouted. "Magic won't break it," said Dot.
"Try something else,"
said Anadil, her 3 rats dangling from tiny nooses next to her. 4, 5. "Break the wood," Nicola cried, eyeing the beams over their heads. Agatha and Sophie both fired at them. The beams only turned thicker and stronger.
6. "Hurry!" Hester bellowed.
Sophie magically sealed the trapdoors around her feet, but the doors grew weaker, threatening to break.
"Spells are backfiring,"
Hort said.
7, 8.
Sophie shot the frozen walls with her glow, hoping to shatter them and let the crowd storm in. 9. Agatha climbed the beams and tried to undo the nooses by hand. They shocked her like lightning, and she fell to the platform.
10,
said the snake. The 2 girls turned to him, panting. "And still no lion," the snake tutted. "So now the real show begins." He opened his palm, and a pack of playing cards appeared with a tuft of smoke. He spread them out in his fingers, revealing some of their faces. Not card faces, Sophie realized. Actual faces. For each of the cards had a prisoner painted on it. Dot? Bogdan? Nicola? The King of Bloodbrook?
"Each of you takes a turn picking a card," the snake said to Sophie and Agatha. "Whoever you pick, their door drops."
The crowd drew a breath, cocking towards the horizon like panicked chickens. Surely Tedros would stop this. Surely he would slay this villain the way King Arthur had slain many before. "Why are you doing this?" Agatha rasped. The snake's eyes glittered like gems.
"Ask my father."
He held out the deck.
"Pick."
Sophie looked at Agatha, paralyzed. Agatha slackened,
her cheeks bright red. Then she picked the first card, the back of it painted with the snake's crest. Her hands shook as she turned the card over. The face on it was Kiko's. The door under Kiko's feet dropped open, but Agatha was already